Yeah, welcome back into In Focus News Radio, KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples, Dave Lewis producing things for us this morning, and we have Bob Koppel, who is the president and CEO of the Ascension Via Christi Hospital here in Manhattan. We're talking COVID-19 here and just kind of what we're experiencing here. He's a little more of an expert on the subject than I am.
I don't know how to call me an expert, but well, a little more knowledge maybe.
Yeah, perhaps. Definitely. I won't say perhaps. That's not the right word. But there are some concerns I know from some folks in the community, and this was brought up to me from a listener, about the potential for bed space. I know it's a if there's a big outbreak here, whether or not we have the capacity at the hospital for a number of folks to be treated there. Is that an issue right now?
So the question actually, there's a couple of factors there. One, most patients won't ever need to go to the hospital. Like vast majority would never even need a hospital bed. And then the other piece that always is so what else is going on? So right now, for example, we still have actually active flu in the community of pretty good numbers. And so that takes capacity. And then there's always, you know, people with cardiac issues, cancer, et cetera. And so that's why it's a little hard to say. Like today, for example, we have ICU beds open. We have med-surg beds open. Wouldn't necessarily be an issue if you actually had people that needed that. I think the experience, again, if you look at other countries who are maybe another month or two ahead of us, there's actually not that many people who needed hospitalized. A lot of this is all going to be handled with your primary care physician in, you know, as an outpatient. And so I think, again, there's the some of the uncertainty, some of the anxiety has been around that, you know, everybody's going to be in the ICU on a ventilator. And that's not actually what we've seen other places. You certainly have certain patients that have that. Again, it tends to be back to that high-risk group, folks who already have a lot of other underlying health issues. And that's also what we see through the rest of the year. That's that same population that's at risk for some of the other respiratory problems, end up with pneumonia, et cetera, that's why they end up in the hospital to begin with. So, I mean, at that part of it, there's actually some similarities in how things kind of pan out or how they work. It also, you know, it's always the issue of number. And so how many people are having symptoms at this level versus, you know, at a higher, more acute level. And so, I mean, I think at this point, and I kind of generalize this to the state of Kansas. I mean, that's always in the back of our minds of what's that going to look like. I don't know that that's actually a concern level because we haven't really seen that play out like in some of the European countries. The biggest thing people can do if they're seeing the symptoms is that they just stay home and self-isolate, if you will. And that has actually shown huge success specifically. You know, actually the number of new cases, for example, in Italy and China have gone way down. And a part of that has just been from people doing some self-isolation. And that's kind of, you know, stopped the passing of it, if you will. And so that, just like with any other respiratory illness, the self-isolation sometimes is the best thing to do. Drink water, you know, stay in bed, that sort of thing.
All right. We have another caller here. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Hey, good morning. Hey, question. And I don't mean this to be dismissive, but is a lot of the response and the hype about this just because we don't know a lot about the coronavirus? You know, it had an outbreak in the Mediterranean, what, 2-3 years ago, you know. So this is not new. The previous caller called it Chinese virus. Is it accurate? It's not new. It's been around. But at this level, we haven't seen and maybe don't know how it's going to react. Is this response from the CDC and the media and everybody, is it just because we just don't understand it? I just don't understand. I have a degree in biochemistry. I just don't understand the level of response and why everyone is acting this way. So I need to be educated a little bit.
You know, of course, everybody responds to things differently. I do think there's certainly a question because you know, initially, there's just question about, so what is actually the source? And was it animal born to human or how did it actually begin? Obviously, now it's being passed human to human. We've had a lot of conversation, obviously, within our work group about this. You know, I think a year from now, everybody's going to view this very differently. and it will be seen as another illness that people get versus right now. I think to your point, there's just is that. So what is this going to look like? How is it going to show up? How many people are actually going to be impacted? What's the impact of the weather? What's the impact of diet? What's the impact of, you know, I think we know that if you have a lot of underlying health conditions, you're, again, like we've said, you're at a higher risk level. But I think part of it is you just have to have that experience. With COVID-19, I mean, this is a new strain of a coronavirus. And so I think a part of it is just getting to have some experience with that, see how that plays out, and see what manners of either, you know, what actions actually are most effective. You have to assume there's going to be some additional testing that gets developed, perhaps some sort of mitigating medications, that sort of thing. You kind of got to give it a little bit of time. And, you know, there's been a whole lot of graphics out about, you know, how you flatten a curve. Well, that actually, and again, that's all based on experience with other respiratory illnesses. And if you can spread out, kind of mitigate to the spread out the peaks of the volume or the severity of the illness, you're actually able to manage it better. And we see that again. You see that play out with flu. People will use the term seasonal flu because it tends to have a season. And so it's just kind of waiting now to see, is this also seasonal or is it not? There's just all that. We won't know actually. The bulk of the folks with this virus have been in the Northern Hemisphere. So what would that be like for Australia, who they obviously now have cases, but they're going into winter, we're coming out of winter. And we won't really know that for another 6 months probably.
Interesting. Do we have another caller, Dave? Let's get to them. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Good morning. I have a couple of questions and a statement. I'll be as brief as I can. I have a little trouble doing that. At your hospital, I was there a couple of weeks ago, and when you walked in the emergency room, they demanded you put a mask on. Has that gone hospital-wide? That's my first question. Second question is, who's in charge? About 15 years or so ago, most of these people I'm going to refer to, everybody lives around here knows who I'm talking about. But I inquired when we were having tornadoes and floods and such, and nobody ever said anything about a chemical, biological, or radiological attack on Manhattan, which we could have because of NBAF coming, because of Fort Riley, because of all the main things around us, the McConnell Air Force Base. I mean, we're in a hot spot in this area. And I just wondered, I inquired of the fire chief, the rural fire chief, the university, the hospitals, the city. I didn't interview, but I talked to all five city commissioners, all three county commissioners, and nobody wanted to take command. The fire chief at that time, he's moved to Emporia. He didn't want to touch it. The police department didn't want to touch it. Nobody wanted to say who's in charge. And I'm wondering, do we need to put someone in charge that you talk to and answer to? Because this thing is very, very serious, or we wouldn't be canceling these national things. It's going to bring us to our knees. And I'd just like to have your opinion, and maybe you're a very intelligent person. You're a doctor. Maybe you should be in charge.
Well, so I'll start with your last comment. So I'm actually not a doctor. I'm just the hospital administrator. I have an engineering background, which is a little peculiar in our field. But to get back to a couple of your questions. So one, it all depends on – we ask screening questions now of everybody coming into the facility and also into our clinics or therapy centers or whatever. And then depending on the answers to the screening questions, which have to do with have you had a temperature, cough, sneezing, all that kind of stuff. So if people are having an affirmative response to that screening, then, yes, we would be asking them to wear a mask. And that's really just to kind of give some – protection to everybody else, not knowing at that point the person could just have a bad case of the allergies. It's just you've got to kind of get to that. And a lot of the, you know, as we're working with people, we'll have someone kind of delve into that and figure that out. You know, as far as the who's in charge, so in this particular case, this is considered a public health issue. And so the Kansas Department of Health and Environment is actually on point for that. Our local county health department is the local expertise, if you will. They're the ones – I mean, when we've had the meetings over the last few weeks, it's been led and facilitated by our public health department. And we do have participation from law enforcement, first responders, EMS, fire, the healthcare providers in the community. We all are trying to collaborate and work collaboratively and collectively on this. But, you know, in the end, then, so we have this kind of overarching umbrella, and that is our public health system. And then when it comes to care for a specific patient, you know, if they're going to a clinic, their primary care physician or advanced practice provider, whoever they see, they're kind of in charge of their immediate care. They're the ones who know them. They're the ones who know their medical history. They will be the ones that can actually best say, you know, this is what you need to do. You are going to be high risk. You're not. We're going to do this testing or we're not. I think it's kind of a, for me, this is a great opportunity. This is why we think it's so important for people to have primary care providers. And we've, as a society, we've kind of moved away from that. And this is exactly one of the reasons everybody needs to have that, you know, the old term was family doc. But it's really to have that, you know, depending on your health issue, it might be an internist or it might be a family medicine physician, or maybe, certainly a lot of us, I personally have been seen by nurse practitioners and PAs. I'm fine with that. It's really important that you have somebody who knows about you. And this is a great opportunity, I think, a great reminder for all of us of why that is so important.
I have one more question here before, and I know we're running a little bit long here, but just had somebody email me here. They had a question of how many working respirators does a hospital have and how many isolation rooms do you have? Should that be necessary?
So I guess the working respirator question is a little
– or ventilators.
Okay. So we actually have different types of ventilators too. So okay. It's not as simple as we have six. So we have, for example, there's more intricate, high-end, and we have four of those. And then there's others, we've got six of them. And there's others we've got – I mean, so it's not even – and it depends on the patient, what ventilator they actually get. And so that's why and you can actually – we have access to additional equipment. That the equipment piece is usually not the problem. It's all the other stuff that you need. And then, you know, just from an isolation room perspective, so again, a lot of these, especially once you've been diagnosed, you may or may not even need isolation. It's like when you go home, you're not actually in an isolation room. You're just isolated from other people. And that actually has been seen to be pretty effective. In the hospital, it's kind of a range of things. So we've got rooms actually in our emergency room. We've got rooms in our ICU. We've got rooms up on our medical and our surgical floors that are all isolation rooms. By code, the emergency room waiting room is a complete isolation room. It's all negative air. Everything is exhausted from that space. It's just a code requirement of every hospital in the country. And so it's sometimes a little – I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but that's why – so I guess I would not want people to get caught up of how many of this or that we have. That's really not the issue. The issue is what's an individual patient need, and then you match that up with the resource.
All right. We could go on and on with this topic, I'm sure, but we're out of time, Bob, and I appreciate you
coming
on
glad to be here.
Letting people know. We'll stay tuned. More in Focus after this on KMAN.